Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on Sunday, March 26th, 2017. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out on Twitter at Mike Silva Media. You can check out the show all the time at MetsMemorizedOnline.com. And I'm on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire, iTunes, whatever it may be. Hope everybody's doing well, and here we are about a week. Tomorrow will be exactly a week before opening day. Earlier today, before the Mets took on the Atlanta Braves down in Port St. Lucie, I had a chance to catch up with Kevin Kerner of the New York Post. Had a long conversation with Kevin, some real fun stuff. We have Kevin on frequently throughout the year and had him on pretty much, I think, right around or right before, right after pitchers and catchers, around that time, early February, to talk a little bit about as he spends the whole late winter, early spring, down in spring training, Kevin. Talk about what he was expecting to see out of the Mets, some of the stories he was looking at, and on the way out of spring training, get a feel of, was everything he was looking for fulfilled, and is there anything else that we haven't been seeing or haven't been talking about? So Kevin joined me earlier. You'll hear that. He did join me before the news about Steven Matz came out. He did join me before Matt Harvey's outing, so we address the pitching staff. You won't hear those specific things, but I think we address ad nauseum the fact about injuries, and he gives a little take on what he needs, what we need to see, or what he feels needs to be seen from Matt Harvey. Of course, that's the big news coming down. Recently, earlier today, Steven Matz will miss his next start tomorrow. He'll do some long tossing, and it looks like there's a little tenderness in that elbow. And this is par for the course. Certain players, I guess I would use the term injury prone, but at times I really feel that these pitchers today, especially the young pitchers and with the age of information, every ache and pain is reported. Every ache and pain is going to be talked about. Every ache and pain is going to be made to be more than it is. If there's no structural damage, there's tendonitis, don't know what to tell you. If there's no structural damage, he obviously is not hurt. Tendonitis is something that is going to certainly impact him. There were some reports from the beat writers that scouts had said his last outing, which wasn't a good one, that Matz was not finishing his pitches, and maybe that tendonitis, most likely, if definitely, that tendonitis had something to do with it. But here's the good news. The Mets have plenty of pitching depth, and if you heard Terry Collins after the game, it looks like it's going to come down to Wheeler and Lugo, who will battle for that Matz rotation spot. And the reason for that is that Robert Gazelman, number one, has made the rotation, certainly deserves it. And the second reason for that is that it looks like Matt Harvey kind of is making progress. Now, just less than a week ago, we had a podcast with John Delcos, and we talked about the possibility of, Harvey maybe staying behind in spring training, and that's certainly something that looks less likely now. I thought, and I watched pretty much all of Harvey's start. The velocity was there. I thought his secondary pitches, he didn't command them all the time, but his secondary pitches were solid. Let me get you the final line here if you didn't watch the game. The final line of Harvey was 6 innings, 2 runs, a walk, and a strikeout. So you certainly will take that during the regular season. Not a dominant performance, but coming back from the thoracic outlet syndrome, the TOS surgery, you know, hearing that it's a 10-month turnaround, hearing that this is a buildup. If Matt Harvey can give you what he gave you today in a regular season game, then he keeps the Mets competitive. And that's my criteria. Look, you don't expect them to be perfect day one. But like I said earlier in the week, you cannot have him going out there like it's extended spring training with games that count. And that's the same thing with Matt. So I'll say the same thing for any of these guys. If Matt's is not ready, and it sounded like there was some skepticism that he would be on the opening day roster, then you got to go with guys who are ready. And if that's Wheeler or Lugo, personally, I think Lugo's a better option. I still would like to see Wheeler spend a little bit of time getting himself built up down in extended spring. Then those guys have to go. And, you know, looks like that would be the rotation to start off in April. It probably will not be the rotation that will end the season because I think Steven Matz is a talented pitcher. I think he's a guy that, you know, just has to find a way to stay healthy. And maybe at some point the conversation has to be he's going to have to pitch through some pain, which he did last year. So this is not a criticism. I mean, this is a guy that pitched with bone spurs in his elbow and pitched pretty well until it became too much later in the year. The other bit of news, conversation goes down with the roster. There's been some talk about keeping Josh Edgen because if they send Josh Edgen down, he's out of options. They have the possibility of losing him. With Familia most certainly being suspended, and it sounds like it's not going to be a long suspension, but you got to think it's going to at least be a couple of weeks. Edgen might be the guy that benefits from that, at least temporarily. It'd be a little bit harder once the rosters are stabilized those first couple of weeks when they send Edgen down for him to be picked up. You never know. I mean, it happens at all times in the season. But April, you know, early April, mid-April, GMs are trying not to mess around with those rosters all that much. There's talk of keeping an extra pitcher. I don't know what that means right now. So I was looking at Terry's comments. I saw there was talk of keeping an extra pitcher. Does that mean 11 or 12? So if it means 12, then there's a very good chance that a Montero or a Sewald, a Paul Sewald, who's pitched well enough to be on the roster this season. But he's not on the 40-man, so sometimes it comes down to who is the most logical in terms of easiest to put on the roster. The only way I think a Sewald gets on the roster is if you designate someone for assignment like an Eric Godel. That's a name that comes up right now. You would think if Montero had a bad spring, it might be him, but he's had a great spring. He's already on the 40-man, so he seems more likely if they were going to take the extra pitcher. But the other thing to keep in mind is that you could move David Wright to the 60-day DL, and I almost feel like that's going to happen. But then when Wright comes back, if he comes back, you would have to make a corresponding move, but you kind of worry about that when the time comes. So right now, no Familia opening day. He'll be suspended. You have maybe Edgen in his spot, Reed, Salas, Blevins, Robles, and then Smoker, who had a good outing, and it seems like he's pretty much going to be the second lefty. And if they have Edgen, they'll have 3 lefties there earlier in the season. So that's a really good bullpen. I've heard some pundits. I heard Francesa talking earlier this week how he was worried about the Mets bullpen. I'm really not. I'm not really worried about Addison Reed. I think Familia will be fine once he comes back. I mean, Salas and Blevins are pretty good in the seventh inning, and Blevins as a situational guy. You know, Smoker, to me, continues to impress and continues to pitch well. I don't like Robles all that much, but if you want a guy that could certainly be a long guy. Now, here's the and I say long guy, goes a couple of innings early in the game. I don't like him late innings. Lugo would play into this. So if Lugo's not in the rotation, then you put Lugo in there, and then that obviously would impact whether Montero or Sewald would make the team, because I think Lugo's going to be in there. And you're going to need, and you could see it pretty early on here, you're going to need Lugo in that bullpen to keep it stretched, because there's going to be times, inevitably, with Harvey in his situation, with Matz and what you see now with the tendonitis, and maybe even with skipping Syndergaard or one of the other guys at some point for the quote-unquote rest. That's the new thing in sports is rest. Lugo's going to be making some starts. Not that they would go six-man rotation, but doubleheaders, rainouts. Lugo's going to make starts for this team, and he's going to be the guy. Almost how Carlos Torres used to be. The only hope I have is that he doesn't turn into being overused and abused like Carlos Torres was during his tenure. So that's something just to keep an eye on. So they always worry about that. With Worthen and Collins, historically, they have not been very responsible with certain arms, although Lugo would fall into the younger arms category versus the veteran who kind of built his way in. So he might not be the one that would be a candidate for abuse, but you know, at any point in time with those two guys, you know what I've said. Bullpen management, keeping pitchers you know, healthy through lack of abuse has not been their strength. It's funny, it's two dichotomies here. You have the too much conservative, every ache and pain reported from you know, the guys like DeGrom and Matt and Harvey, you know, so on and so forth. And then you have the abuse cases you've seen over the years, you know, the lefty situation, lefties and Torres and guys like that. So anyway, it'll be interesting how the roster and I'll do a real quick before I break and we hear the Kernan interview. You obviously are going to keep the two catchers. You have the five infielders. So you right now you have Cabrera, Duda, Flores, Reyes, Neil Walker. I put Rivera as a highly likely TJ Rivera making the team. Like I said, the two catchers, Darno and Rene Rivera. And then you have the four outfielders, Bruce, Cespedes, Granderson, and maybe Lagares. If Lagares is out, then Conforto takes over for Lagares. And then it's a matter at that point. So you've got 6, 8, 12, 13, 11 pitchers is 24. Who gets the last spot? I don't know if Nimmo's hamstring will allow him to make the team. A point was made by a caller on WFAN earlier today that they really don't have a lefty bat off the bench, and Nimmo would be that guy because he would be the guy to be the lefty bat off the bench because you really don't want Conforto to be that guy. So it'll be really interesting how the roster shakes out as you go here into this final week. I'm ready for spring training to end. I'm ready for the regular season. I don't really know much more to talk about other than previewing the division a little bit, playing around with the roster. I mean, there's a little, obviously Harvey and Matt gave us a little bit of news today, but essentially with Kernan, I went into the same narrative that, hey, ready for this to start. Spring training's too long. Get a little bit about the WBC and his thoughts, and also took a little interesting wrinkle where, you know, keeping an eye across town with the Yankees. The Yankees have some very interesting young players, and maybe you're starting to see these two teams get a little juice later on this year when they play the Subway Series, because it's been lacking for a long time. I would say the better part of about 6 or 7 years. It's been lacking. And a lot of it has to do with the Mets weren't very good. The Yankees declined. The Yankees kind of became a somewhat mediocre veteran team. There wasn't that connection like in the late 90s, turn of the century, where there was that rivalry with Bobby Valentine and Joe Torre. You never know. Right now, and I know that the nature of these organizations with Cashman, Girardi, Alderson, Collins is to downplay it, and it's another game and not really get amped up. But similar to what I say all the time with the WBC, those are now games that are test games, just like the Nationals. There's always a test series. And, yeah, you have to play every day, and you have to, you know, play it at bat, inning by inning. You know, baseball is a very rote, grind it out, you know, not look too far ahead sport. That's how you're successful, and then you build something up. But there are times where you need to take it to the next level, and there are certain series that, to me, are test series, not series that will, you know, end your season or mean that you can't compete, but tells me exactly that you're ready to compete at a higher level. And sometimes because of the energy level of the Subway Series, that series is something to take a look at and can be one of those touch points throughout the season where you say, where is this team at? Including the natural times, like with the Nationals and the Cubs, they play the Dodgers or the Giants or teams like that, that most certainly you think would be in contention. So anyway, I'm going to take a quick break. And when we return, you'll hear from Kevin Kernan. Like I said, I caught up with Kevin before the Mets took on the Braves today in Port St. Lucie. And we'll get into a bunch of stuff. Didn't get into the Mats and Harvey stuff because happened before the game, but we talked about Harvey anyway, and I think it's very pertinent, his answer, and obviously Steven Matz, I think, falls into the whole if they stay healthy kind of situation. And I personally, if I hear no structural damage, I'm not really sure that there's all that much to talk about other than maybe giving him a little bit more time. And at some point, I think the Mets need to really just maybe not say as much or not report every ache and pain that these guys have. Because there's no structural damage. He's got tendonitis. Shot, rest. I mean, those things usually just pass. I mean, that's the way the human body works. So anyway, let's take a break. When I return, you'll hear from Kevin Kern of the New York Post right after this.
Hey, Mets fans. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. If you're looking for the best unbiased and independent coverage of the New York Mets, then look no further than MetsMerizedOnline.com. Mesmerized Online is the go-to place for comprehensive Mets coverage, including exclusive interviews, daily original articles, great weekly features, in-depth analysis, minor league reports, game-by-game breakdowns, and so much more. Find out why thousands of fans turn to Mesmerized Online every day to get the latest news and opinions about the Mets. Coming from an impressive staff of the most passionate fans and skilled writers ever assembled, all in one place. Check it out for yourselves, Mets fans. Go to MetsMerizedOnline.com right now. That's Mets, M-E-R-I-Z-E-D, online.com, and get Metsmerized today.
We're back, and with us, and he joined us earlier this spring, is Kevin Kern of the New York Post, sports columnist. He's been covering spring training. You could check him out on Twitter at Where's Kernan. Kevin, 5 weeks into spring training, are you tired of the sunsets and the good food and the good weather? And it is a bit of the monotony part of spring with baseball. Are you tired of it? Are you ready to come back up north to the grind and the reality?
Not ready for the weather, but definitely ready to get out of spring training. I mean, it's a beautiful where I'm at right now. It's a beautiful sun, 70 degrees, sunny. And it's really been, I got to say this, Mike, I'm not trying to rub it in anybody's face up north, but it's been the best spring training weather I've ever seen in Florida, Arizona, Florida. This year was by far the best spring training weather ever. And it's way too long. I mean, way too long for a thousand reasons. And the players are ready to go about a week ago, and same for me. I mean, it's just too much now, and it's a waste of time. And I don't know why they. I know this year was the WBC, but they really need to shorten spring training.
And that's a great way, perfect segue into my first point. You've been, and I've seen you on Twitter, you've been more pro-WBC. The tournament is over 10 years old now, and I would say this is the first year I actually was more engaged with it, even though I've tried to, you know, cover the sport from a professional perspective. The only criticism I could say, Kevin, and I know it's beautiful out in San Diego, the weather, but those 10 o'clock starts, I think, took a little bit away from the later rounds. But give your point of view here. It's a success, and it seems like it's something that may have some potential to get bigger as we get into the, you know, tournaments down the road and what have you.
Yeah, I've been a huge proponent of it, really. The things that I back usually are worth backing. When I worked in San Diego, I was like one of the few guys in the media who pushed for Petco Park, because my argument basically was the politicians are going to get our money anyway. Let's at least get a ballpark out of it where you can take your kids to a game. And same thing with the WBC. You know, I covered the first three. We didn't cover this one this year because I was busy with Mets and Yankees stuff. But it's a tremendous event, and you have to go there to really appreciate it, because again, the country's the sense of pride that they have in watching their players play together as a unit. It's almost like the way I can best describe it, and it's on a much larger level, so just so people understand it. But anyone that had kids that played baseball, if their kids make the All-Star team and then they play for the All-Star team, it's a sense of pride. And that's what the WBC is. My first time I saw the WBC, Carlos Beltran in the BC, he had just an unbelievable game, unbelievable series. And I told him, I said, geez, now I know why everybody's talking about it. Now I know you're really this good, because he just stepped it up a notch. And especially the players from Dominican and Puerto Rico, and even the United States guys, they stepped it up a notch, and it's fun. It's a fun March tournament, and you know, I'm all for it. And hopefully, some of the major league players are just such babies. Go for it a little bit more.
And you know, Kevin, you've been covering baseball a long time. I always felt in the early days of interleague play, when the Mets would play the Yankees, those games were big. You know, middle of the season, And at least for the Mets, not so much for the Yankees, it was a good opportunity to take their season to another level, almost prepare for a postseason run, you know, put players in a different level of pressure and see how they respond. Do you feel that some of the players that were in this tournament experienced something like that in March, and for maybe a Seth Lugo, a TJ Rivera, guys that normally would be just getting a couple of at-bats and playing in meaningless games, maybe that will help them as we get into the baseball season?
Absolutely. It's going to raise their confidence level, too, because they're on the stage with the best in the world. And I did something early on Seth Lugo, early. It might have been even late, you know, very first week of February. And I was letting fans know that this guy has a real chance there. He's a different kind of guy. He's one of these guys that anything he does really well. Like one of his teammates told me, he picks up a guitar and all of a sudden he's playing the guitar. You know, he can do anything. He's a very talented young man. And, I think we've seen that, and I think it'll help him and definitely TJ Rivera. Now, I haven't seen TJ since he came back, but he's such an excited, he loves the game anyway. He's good for a clubhouse. He'll be good for the Mets. He's an enthusiastic player. So, this will make them better players. And I know people get carried away about the injuries, but you know what? Injuries happen no matter what. And as long as you're kind of smart, and even Didi's injury happened. It happened, it happened in an exhibition game. It wasn't a real WBC game, so it's not like he ramped. Yeah, it's a good experience. These guys will learn from it. They'll be better players from it. And they have something that they'll, they build bonds with other players. So, for example, TJ Rivera, he may be able to call on a Carlos Beltran later in the year when he sees them, or I'm sure he'll stay in touch for, like, maybe some hitting tips and things like that. So, I see no downside to the WBC.
Any opportunity to take it to the next level in the sense where maybe, and I know shutting the season down for 2 weeks in the middle of the year would be controversial, but, what do you think? Is there a way to take this where it's in the summer, you get a little bit of better network coverage in the sense where you can maybe have it in a time zone that the East Coast could not have to wait till 10 o'clock. It may add a little amped up, energy. The All-Star game stinks. I mean, it's not the same, Kevin, so it's not like you're taking away from that every 4 years. Any thoughts on how you would improve it to get it to the next level if you feel it needs to go to that level?
No, I wouldn't. The only thing I would change, you make a good point, and they can do it now. I mean, it was ridiculous starting those games at 10 o'clock Eastern. I mean, you could start them any time out west. It doesn't matter. I don't know what that was about. Maybe that's something about maybe they did some studies. And I'm sure it's the TVs wanted it at that time, but it's their own network. So, it's ridiculous starting them that late. But I would not move the WBC time-wise. I would not put it at the All-Star game because I think then, to be quite frank, you'd have a chance for major injury. Guys are exhausted at that point anyway. A lot of times they need the All-Star break for what it used to be, a break. The problem with the All-Star game now, Mike, is that they got these guys doing so much stuff from the time they get there. You know, it's a nonstop event, so it's good to do it. It's fun to do it, but the game itself, I agree with you, it's nothing like it used to be. It stinks. I've covered all the All-Star games too, for the most part, and I'll tell you right now, I would not miss it if they told me I'm not going to Miami this year. I think the All-Star game is almost past its prime in a lot of different ways, and I don't even know if we need it anymore. And I think that the players themselves need a break at that time of year. But the WBC is a great time of year. I wouldn't bring it like a quarterfinals and have the W. I think you lose all momentum and things like that. So it's here to stay, and they sell a lot of gear.
Could be worse. You could be covering the NBA All-Star game. Think about that.
Oh, my God. Or the NBA. Or the NBA's phone.
I have with me Kevin Kernan, New York Post, at Where's Kernan, down in sunny Florida, wrapping up spring training, and figured, hey, we kicked off early February talking to Kevin and getting his thoughts as we headed into spring. Why not get the thoughts as the spring training grind is coming to an end? So, Kevin, going into spring training, you had some thoughts on the Mets. You spent some time there. I know you've been down in Tampa with the Yankees as well. Coming out of Port St. Lucie now, over a month after spending some time there, have your thoughts changed? Are the things that you were focused on still the same things you're focused on? Where are you at with the Mets now compared to maybe where you were earlier in the spring?
Well, I think the Mets really, having the biggest thing that I saw was Cespedes being in better shape, being mentally prepared to really be a star this year. I expect them to be MVP, actually. And I think between Syndergaard and Cespedes, you have the two guys, the tandem that can carry the Mets into the playoffs. So you have two monsters there. And, you know, now the other guys got to just do their thing. DeGrom is better than, you know, DeGrom looks better, way better than last year. He'll be a force. You obviously have your issues with David Wright, but we knew going in that if he can't throw, he can't play. It's really that simple. And we'll see where it goes from there. But, the Mets will be fine. They'll be solid. It was a typical Mets spring. There were some little quirky things, but it always happens, you know, starting off with the Tebow stuff. I think the Mets are, and Washington's better too. One thing I noticed that, you know, fans better be prepared for is that, Harper looks bigger, stronger, and more geared for this year. So I think, he had that shoulder injury last year. I think that really affected him. I think he's in much better shape this year, ready to rock and roll. So I think it'll be a big time year for him. And I think that it's almost like the Nationals will have that attitude, the end of the line, because we're going to change pretty soon with Worth and other guys leaving. So I think the Nationals will be in that respect, a little bit more focused. The Yankees, there's some of the kids, I love Torres, the kid, Gleyber Torres. I talked to Reggie about him the other day. I think that the kid came up from the Cubs, he's going to be a future star. I think he'll be a third baseman, that's my guess, or maybe second. But he seems to have a third baseman's body to me. So I think that's the plan. I think the plan is to move him in there 2 years when Headley is basically done, and move Castro over or whatever. But the Yankee young talent's got to come through. Aaron Judge, those guys. Tyler Wade, very impressed with him. He's kind of a rock. He reminds me of a Chris Gomez type shortstop. He's very steady. Out security is what they call it. And of course, Greg Bird wrote about him this week. And Reggie gave me a term which I ran with, and I think you'll see more of it now in the future, just like bat speed and exit velocity. But Reggie pointed out that Mr. Bird has barrel accuracy, and that's been lost in the sauce with all these, with all the newfangled GMs, Ivy League GMs, assistant GMs, and their friends at the front office trying to make everything a spreadsheet, not baseball, and everybody can quantify bat speed. But it's like Reggie said to me, bat speed's great, but, it's bat speed. What the heck? You need to make contact on the solid part of the bat with the ball, and that's what Greg Bird does. That's why those balls boom, And the amazing thing for Bird, when he hit those 11 home runs 2 years ago, he told me his shoulder was never right that year. So I think we're seeing we got a chance here to see a real star emerge in Greg Bird. So I'm really up on him. Yankees pitching still scares the heck out of me. Pineda, I'm so tired of talking about Pineda. The same story over and over and writing about him. He just can't seem to, when something goes wrong, he can't react to it. That's the problem with Pineda. But that's the problem, Mike, with a lot of pitchers these days, because they baby them so much, force them to learn how to become pitchers, that they just go with their stuff and they don't know how to pitch. And I think the Yankees have a few guys in that category. So Tanaka, one thing I noticed about Tanaka, definitely better shape than he was in last year. I mean, that really struck me looking at his body. And, he worked out more this winter. He's clearly, to me, he's gearing up to opt out. I mean, I expect him to opt out, and who knows where he winds up, but he looks very good.
Do you think, after seeing both these clubs, and it's less of importance as we go into the season, but is there an opportunity to maybe get some more juice back to the Subway Series? I mean, we talked about the WBC. The Subway Series over the last, I'd say, 3-4 years has definitely lost a lot of luster. Maybe that has to do with people getting tired of just the interleague concept, but like I said, back in the 90s, and I understand it's a totally different team back then because of the way the Yankees were and who they were and Bobby V and things like that, it was always a good mid-season, almost postseason type of warm-up. And it'd be nice to maybe get some of that back, but I don't know if you can. But the Yankees being young and a little bit different, maybe there's an opportunity there with the Yankee-Met thing kind of, rekindling a little bit.
Well, the Yankees players, these younger players, will play with much more enthusiasm than you saw in the past. So that will bring it up a notch. the problem you have is you don't have Bobby V. Terry's always down talking to, you know, just another series. Same thing with Girardi for the most part, although Girardi's been better about it. And then, and you don't have Steinbrenner around. Steinbrenner used to make it for, you know, George, the boss. And, so I think, in a lot of ways, it is just another series. It's a nice, but I gotta say, to cover it, you know, when it comes around, it's a fun thing because once again, you can feel the energy rise, and that's what it's all about, the energy rising. And I think as a team, the Yankees' energy will rise this year with some of the players they have. And, you know, it'd be great to see Judge play well. And I think, same thing with the Mets. I want to see Conforto come around this year. You know, I love his swing. I think he's going to be fine, and, they can find spots for him. And that's, and the Mets aren't going to need as much as the Yankees because their pitching is so dominant. I've seen all the teams out in Florida and, you know, watch some of the other ones on TV over in Arizona. No staff compares to the Mets staff. It's really that simple, Mike. That'd be one of those 1960s staffs that were pretty good, you know, four deep. You know, the Orioles, the Dodgers, not comparing it to Sandy Koufax and those guys, but it's a deeper staff than anybody else has. The big question will be that closer role for me when he gets back or whatever. And Addison Reed, I think he's more geared for a setup man than a closer. But I think the starters are really going to try to commit themselves to go a little bit longer to make it a little bit easier on the bullpen as well.
And actually, not in your paper, but in the competing paper, John Harper talked about the depth. And I know you would agree here. Robert Gsellman a year ago, Seth Lugo a year ago, we just mentioned him. Who would have thought that they were viable depth? You know, the Mets are able to let Bartolo Colon walk, even though they probably, in theory, could have used a veteran arm. But you've got Wheeler. And now, you know, Kevin, I don't like him because I've never seen much of him at the big league level that tells me he's a pitcher. But Rafael Montero's starting to learn a little bit here. Still walks way too many batters. I think still nibbles a little bit too much. But who knows? You know, the depth here, Rick Peterson always has told me you need 10 pitchers going into the season that you could count on for some actual viable starts, not just a warm body. You got about 8 or 9 right now, and none of them are these like veterans that you're trying to just find magic in a bottle. They're young guys who have good arms, who are viable, assuming they're all healthy.
Yeah, and Montero, that's a good one to bring up. Maybe he's learning how to pitch a little, because that's the key. They make adjustments, so you got to adjust back. And Montero, you know, he's obviously got some stuff. He has trouble against the real major leaguers because they know how to work the at-bat, and that's what he's got to overcome. Same thing with Severino. You know, I compare it to Severino on the other side. But yeah, with this kind of talent, pitching talent, and it's funny, too, you know, Syndergaard is, you know, he's rooming with Gsellman this year. He referred to him last week when I was there. And my son, Robert Gsellman, so he's really taking him under his wing. And it's going to be interesting to see. And that's the thing, that the Mets have that, and the Yankees do too in Tanaka. They have that one kind of ace guy, but Syndergaard is a, you know, he's going to lead by example for this team. And I think that's, you know, he's going to set a tone. He can't wait to beat the Nationals. Mike, I think they also match up, the Mets, just the way they're built. I think they match up very well with the Cubs. They're not afraid of the Cubs at all. So if they get to meet them in the postseason, I think it'll be a great series for the Mets.
Matt Harvey's starting later today, and obviously he's been a topic of conversation. A couple of ways I look at it, Kevin. First off, if a guy's throwing 94, 95, I understand command, control, secondary pitches. It's not just about velocity. But if that's what everyone's worried about, to me, it's a bigger picture. 94, 95, Keith Hernandez says this all the time. That's plenty of velocity. But he's coming back from a serious injury, second serious injury. Depending on what he does today, I mean, I'm not of the mindset he has to be in the rotation day one. We just talked about that depth. What are you looking for Matt Harvey? I think he's got today's start, maybe one more, that makes you feel like, hey, this is a guy that should be in the rotation day one. I don't want them to put him in there and work himself into baseball shape in April. They can't afford to throw games away. You mentioned the Nationals recently. And even at the bottom of the division, the teams are not going to give them gimme games. It's every game's going to be tough. So what are you looking for from him to say, hey, yeah, he can make starts and be competitive and maybe not be Matt Harvey 2013, but be the Matt Harvey somewhere in between that gives the Mets a chance to win every night?
Well, I've been saying all along that Matt Harvey needs time, and that's the one thing that Matt Harvey has to give himself time, too. he's got to understand the seriousness of this surgery, where he's coming from. And I would not rush Matt Harvey or Zach Wheeler one bit. Even if they didn't like it, I would, if I thought I had better options there, I would keep them down for extended spring and let them come around that way. And, that's a decision for the Mets front office. But if you rush Matt Harvey right now, going right into the mix and have him work his way through it, like you say, I think that's a mistake. You have depth, use it. You know, I always say keep it simple, stupid when it comes to, you know, making decisions of baseball. And that's the biggest, even in sports and Super Bowls and stuff like that. I mean, basically the last two Super Bowls were won because the opposing team, the Patriots' last two victories were because the opposing team acted stupid and tried to do something really stupid at the end. And, you know, I think the same thing happens in baseball. You just keep it simple, work these guys back slowly, and use your depth. And plus, here's the other thing. Seth Lugo has already pitched a WBC game, so he's ramped it up more. He knew he was – I talked to him, early February, and he knew he was going into WBC with a purpose. So he had ramped up his workouts earlier, so he's ready to go in a situation like this. So it's to me, it would be, you know, I think the biggest mistake the Mets could do right now is kind of rush Matt Harvey, and by rushing him, I mean putting him in a position where he thinks he can't fail, and as a result, I think it's going to slow down his progress. I think it'd be better to take him along slow, and to me, there's no point in keeping him back.
What do you think about the rest of the division? You mentioned the Nationals. The Braves look like they, you know, I'm not saying they're going to be a contender, but I don't think they're going to be pushovers. They got some veterans there. You know, the Phillies, you hear about some of the young players in AAA. And you have the Marlins with Don Mattingly, and you never could figure out what you're going to get there.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of them.
You know, there's still a hangover effect. They lost a – no, not at all. You don't think that they're going to be plucky teams? That you think it's really Mets, Nationals, and the Mets, could, if they do – they stay healthy and do the right thing, could beat up a little bit on the other three guys?
Yeah, the problem – I have with the Marlins, you have a sale going on with the ownership. That always filters its way to the team because guys start thinking about me instead of us because they know ownership is changing. And again, they have that, they do, they have the hangover effect. Their pitching's not as good as it should be, I don't think. They always have seemed to have the Mets numbers. They always play the Mets tough, so you got to consider that. What I've seen the Phillies, I am not excited at all. Not excited at all. The young talent doesn't excite me. What they're doing doesn't excite me. I think they're going to be total pushovers. And the Braves, their offense, I find very questionable at this point. And I don't think they're going to be, contenders or anything close to it. And I could be wrong there, but I think it's going to be a Mets Nationals division and they need to beat up on the lower half of the division.
Travis d'Arnaud, are we making too much of the throwing situation? I mean, he wasn't that bad a couple of years ago, had the shoulder injury last year, hitting much better this spring. I always think back to the 90s, Kevin, when Charlie O'Brien came in. I know I'm dating myself, I'm going way back, and you had Rick Cerrone, Charlie O'Brien, Mackie Sasser. You know, one pitcher wanted Charlie O'Brien, another guy wanted Cerrone. Nobody wanted Sasser. Sasser was the best hitter but couldn't throw. Now, I'm not saying d'Arnaud was Mackie Sasser, but it's an interesting thing because Rene Rivera has some skills that d'Arnaud obviously doesn't have, and vice versa. You almost want to clone the two. Catching is a big part. Catch and throw guys are important, but you need a bat. You can't have too many automatic outs in a lineup. What are your thoughts on that? Because it seems to be becoming a story, this d'Arnaud throwing and what have you.
Yeah, I go all the way back to the 60s, so I got dated by about 30 years.
Yeah, you do.
And d'Arnaud, I noticed it early in camp, and I wrote about it in one of the things we call, sometimes I wind up doing the training day thing that went to the post as well. And I made a big deal about it the first throw that he made at camp. I noticed he double clutched and the runner was safe. And that's what I'm seeing there. It's not necessarily the throwing. He's double clutching. It's almost like he should kind of tell his arm what to do. And that tells me with Sherlock, the new coach, they've been going over so much stuff that he's thinking too much, and none of this is coming naturally to him until that happens. Like even the other day, it was two starts ago for Syndergaard in the And I stayed back for the minor league start, started against some Cardinals double A guys, I think they were. And it really caught my eye that day as well that he actually got backwards in my mind that he needs to really keep working on this, Darno, because there was a stolen base from a minor leaguer, and Darno, the ball went straight to center field. It wasn't even close. I mean, you know, so he's missing big time. So he must be going through all these things in his head until he gets to that point. It's going to be a problem, and they better clean it up quickly because, you know, these things always seem to get worse, not better, if you don't clean it up quickly. So we'll see where it goes with Darno. I like Darno's bat a lot. It's a lot to do. He changed his swing. He's changing his throwing mechanics. That's a lot in 1 year. This is why catching is so hard, and this is why Gary Sanchez is so good. I mean, I got a big piece coming out on him in the email, you know, our post preview, whenever that runs, right before the season usually. And, you know, it's amazing not only what he's doing, but how he matches up, you know, how, you know, historical, what he's capable, the people think he can do in historical, you know, proportions considering the Yankees' history of catching. And, so Darno has to, whatever he's doing wrong, and, you know, as soon as I see them, I'll be with the Mets early in the season. You know, I'll have a chat with him. He has a tendency to kind of say everything's right when, you know, and he's such a good kid, and he works very hard. I think he just I think he's going through some things, you know, mentally that are affecting his mechanics, and he's going to have to smooth that out.
And you know, Kevin, you saw it with Michael Conforto. Today's day and age, there's so many coaches, so much data.
Yeah.
And even in the newspaper business, it's at a point where if I'm a player or anything, you have to say, okay, what do I need? What do I not need? You have a lot of well-intentioned people walking around that clubhouse in the front office. At some point, you got to say, this is my process. This is how I've gotten here, and go about it. And you worry because I saw with Conforto, it was, you know, he goes down, he's working with Backman, he, you know, then he goes back up, he's with Long, and it's back and forth. And then you got Darno with the special catching instructor. You worry that we're going down this path again, and you've seen it with a young hitter last year. And the Mets just can't afford that black hole, or else they're going to have to go out and get a catcher, and that is not easy, as you saw last year with trying to get Jonathan Lucroy, and it's expensive too. Let's face it.
Yeah, that's why I'm you know, I think Darno, you know, it's up to him to straighten it out, and I think he's capable of it. So I'm not ready to go down that path yet. But yeah, there's too many chefs in all walks across baseball now, and part of that is because the upper management is forcing these guys on people, and you know, you got too many people in your ear, and if you step back and look at it too, half these guys that are telling you how to hit with 240 hitters themselves. Now they may be good coaches, but there may be some that when you get one thing I've noticed about, and again I've been around the game a long time, if you have too much information, that's a problem. And I think we're in the age of baseball sometimes where there's too much information for the athletes to really respond to. Now, it's great to have all the information you need to make decisions, but these guys don't need to have every little thing going on. And I also think, and you've seen this, I would not be surprised if it takes, you know, a period of time for Sherlock and Darno to click and to make all those adjustments, because it doesn't happen overnight. And then if you try to rush it, it becomes worse. So there's a little too much emphasis on detail. Sometimes you just got to go out there, you know, and play. I was taught many years ago, it was one of the great sayings, and I've related to players through the years, and they enjoy it when I mention it to them. The question is, it goes back to Yogi Berra type style, but the saying is, if you think, you stink. And I think if you think too much in baseball, you can stink. And I think that's where some of these, you know, these guys got to avoid that trap.
Absolutely. So what are we going to get out of you the rest of spring? You know, we're going to miss the photos of the sunset, you know, your lunch places. If anybody ever wants to go down to Florida, you could just go to your Twitter feed, make a couple of notes. You know, you have to, Kevin, you have the baseball. You may need to start your own blog of like a spring training blog of some sort. You might have a lot of hits on that. You might make a few extra bucks. You never know.
I'm going to have to ask you for some advice on that to get that rolling down the road.
Make sure you have a full-time job. There's not a lot of money in the business. You got to have a full-time cash cow if you want to pay the bills, you know?
Exactly. That's where it is in life these days. But I do think that, to be quite frank, I think there's a huge opening for for like this that kind of coverage plus information on young players, because it seems like there's more interest now in young players than ever before, and the fans can't get enough of that. That's why, if you notice, a lot of my stories this year too, I wasn't afraid to write about the young players and where they're from and what they're coming, you know, what they're going through and things like that. And also who really is good and who's not. You see it when you're out there. I mean, I went and visited Clint. One of the first things we talked about last time was Clint Frazier, my visit to him in Atlanta. And I pointed out, I said, this kid's got a lot of talent. I think he has some maturity levels that he has to overcome. And I think the rest of the world saw that this spring. So I know what I'm talking about. And I know what I see. And, you know, especially when it comes, actually, I just had a great breakfast myself. So I'm actually doing a little R&R this week, but then we're going to get right into it. You know, we're going to have, you know, every day pretty much with baseball between the Yankees and Mets, you know, the Post, nobody covers it like the Post, and we'll be flying into it. And, but I do think there's almost, we've reached the point now where, you know, let's get it going. Let's make these games real. Cause these players too, the other thing they do is, some of these guys, that's why I don't pay attention to a lot of like stats, certainly not spring training. I look at what I'm seeing with my eyes, like the Darno throwing, or, you know, what I'm seeing in, you know, with Glaber, his confidence and the way he reacts in the clubhouse, his maturity level. That's what I see in spring training. I don't rely on stats and numbers. I'm not going to get carried away with them, although the Chris Carter stat is pretty amazing, the strikeouts. And I think that's, now we're going to see how it plays on the next stage. Cause there's those, like Hubie Brown told me many, many years ago about basketball. He was saying basically there's four seasons in basketball, the preseason, the regular season, and then the stretch of the regular season, and then the playoffs. And the same thing with baseball. We're about to step into a new season. We'll see what players can step up.
And I'll tell you, I'll leave you with this. This is the first time that you can say both the Mets and the Yankees have a lot of young players at the same time that are very interesting. Mets might be a little bit further along, but I don't remember in the last 25, 30 years where they are more closely aligned, although I guess you would give the Mets a little edge. But the Yankees have some really interesting young players, as you said, and it could be fun. It might get that juice back. It's good when both teams are good. The coverage is better, in my opinion, Kevin. The buzz around baseball is better, and it makes your job a lot more fun, let's face it. I just one last thought before I let you go. I figured I'd throw out there.
Oh, absolutely. We always, that's why people always say, well, the media is negative, blah, blah, blah. We want to cover good teams because more people read us and it's more fun to be around. You know, and to your point, I was talking to a scout the other day about the Yankees, and he told me, and this guy covers a lot of the minor leagues, Yankees, you know, that's his main deal. And he said, you know, I was sending him my reports and I checked off, I think the number was 12. He had 12 Yankee minor leaguers that he, you know, plus guys, you know, and he says I've never done that with the Yankees. So wow. There's a whole, you know, there's a lot coming for the Yankees. The Yankee fans have to be patient, and I think they will be. I think they've reached that point. And you know, these, you know, even little things, you know, Tyler Wade, you know, he's not the greatest. You know, he's going to struggle. They're going to have some struggle hitting with their shortstop, no matter who they have there right now, filling in for Didi, because Didi was such an important part. But at least they have the opportunity to go down to the minors now. And pick up a player. They never had that before. They've rebuilt the farm system. They've done some good job scouting. And, you know, one player we didn't mention, but, you know, Kaprian, I'm curious to see what he does down the road as well for the Yankees. So, and that's the difference between the Yankees and the Mets. The Mets just have so many, because so many of those arms that were held over from the previous administration really blossomed, giving more space to Sandy to go out and get a Syndergaard and develop some other players. So it's almost a combination of two factors for the Mets. That's why they have so much pitching. And whereas the Yankees, you know, they're still struggling in that respect. But I do think the Yankees need to take the leap and really have confidence in young players and roll them out there and let them play together. Because the final thought, one thing I've noticed with the Yankees is that these young guys play together as a team and want to win. And I think the Mets got that going for them. I think Syndergaard sets the tone there as wanting them to win. Winning is the most important thing. And that's why I think, you know, I think that's why the Mets will be in great, you know, good shape this year and the Yankees are coming. And that's why I like the last point I want to make is, you know, I put the best move of the offseason. A lot of people may disagree with me, but I think, at least for right now, I think getting Chris Sale for the Red Sox was a great addition, because this guy's all about winning. And that's the sixth tool that's been lost, the guys that want to win for their team and not just, want to do it for the fantasy deal.
Remember while you're out today in the nice weather down there that there's a lot of people reading you and reading your Twitter feed, and I don't know if you're on Instagram, we put those pictures on that are sitting in 50-degree and rainy weather. So feel a little sorry for them, Kevin, while you enjoy the rest of spring training. But I appreciate very generous of your time today. Thanks a lot. I'll catch up with you during the season, and a big fan, and we enjoy your work here. So keep it up, and let's keep in touch. All righty?
You got it, Mike. Always a pleasure. And remember, I'm on Instagram as well. Where's Kernan? And I don't gloat. I goat. Greatest of all time.
Greatest of all time. That's right. Kevin, be well. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye-bye, Mike.
Kevin Kernan of the New York Post, at Where's Kernan on Twitter. I enjoy him. I know some people get angry with Kevin. Some of the guys, he's not really anti-stat. He's pro common sense. I like him, and maybe it's maybe I'm from a different generation. But I love talking to Kevin Kernan. He's always been good to me. He's always been good to this program. And if you're not following him on Twitter, if you're not following him or reading his columns at the New York Post, go do that now. That's a Sunday assignment here. And there's really not a heck of a lot if you're a baseball fan. I mean, the tournament today. You got that. It's a lazy Sunday. Maybe you're a fan of The Walking Dead. That's coming to an end. Maybe you have some other, Sunday entertainment you got going on. But, definitely check out Kevin Kernan. And I'm ready for the regular season. Like I said in the open, I'm ready for it. I kind of losing a little steam on how to, even from a show perspective, like I said, just losing a little steam on how to really put together the most entertaining and best product. But next week, we will do a little bit of a preview show. I'm working on that, see what kind of guests I can get for that. And get a perspective of the rest of the division. I wasn't really able to. I wanted to do some of those segments throughout the spring. So what I'm going to try to do is get somebody who has a good feel. Kevin obviously does, and we talked a little bit about that today. But a good feel of the rest of the division, the rest of the league, and get a sense of, who could we look towards? Obviously, other than the Nationals and Cubs, Dodgers, the obvious teams, Giants, I'll throw in there too. Who else is someone that we need to look at as a possible contender as you look at, as a Mets fan, how this thing's going to shape out, what's going to happen, so on and so forth. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for joining me today. Of course, I want to thank Kevin Kernan, at Where's Kernan on Twitter. You can check him out there, New York Post, nypost.com. You can check me out all the time at MetsMorizeOnline.com. Send me a tweet at Mike Silva Media. And you can check me out on SoundCloud, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If I'm not on one, tell me, I'll get on there. Thanks a lot, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. See you next week for our opening day preview show. Take care.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.